The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com. And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Today it's Wednesday, July 11th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end senseless marijuana prohibition in America. Legalization won't happen without your support. So make sure you join today at norml.org. A lot of people have been asking about the Austin Freedom Fest. Folks, those tickets don't go on sale until July 14th, so a couple more days until the tickets actually go on sale. We have links so that you can link up to the company who's doing the ticket sales at normalaudiostash.com. It's going to be a great show down there. We'll be down there with Normal's Daily Audio Stash podcast. There's about 5,200 seats, although I'm sure it's going to sell out fast. So make sure to mark your calendar. July 14th is when the Austin Freedom Fest tickets go on sale. Now, performing down there with Willie Nelson is a wonderful artist who's done a lot for marijuana law reform as well. Her name is Carolyn Wonderland, and you can find out more about her on our website today. We're going to play some Carolyn Wonderland tunes today right here on the Audio Stash. She has been a great friend of this movement. She was at the Doobie Music Awards in Austin earlier this year for the High Times Doobie Awards down there at the South by Southwest Music Festival. We played some of her tracks then. We're going to play some more today. Also on the program today, our cannabis science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We're going to talk about a couple of important stories with Mitch today. One is how patients with cerebral palsy can really benefit from using marijuana. And also today, we're going to speak with Mitch about a story that will be highlighted tomorrow in Normal's weekly press release. Here's the headline. 70% of all marijuana treatment admissions stem from arrest in Texas, study says. Now, this is a very important study out there, folks, because there are a lot of Americans in drug treatment programs for marijuana, but they're not going there because they're addicted. They're not going there by choice. They're going there because they're court-ordered to do so, because courts, judges, lawyers, they feel it's much more lenient to send somebody into a treatment program than send them to jail for a marijuana possession offense. Now, the ONDCP and the DEA claim now that marijuana is more dangerous today because it's more potent and that it's not your father's or your grandfather's marijuana and it's sending all these people into drug treatment programs. Well, the truth is, folks, that 30 years ago when our fathers and grandfathers were smoking marijuana and they were caught with it, judges did not have the option to send offenders into drug treatment programs. And they do today. So we're seeing just from this data in Texas, 70% of those in drug treatment for marijuana, they're not there because they feel they're addicted. They're there because they're court ordered to do so. And this is important data, folks, because we know that out of all the regular marijuana consumers out there, only about 10% show signs of dependence. I'll tell you what's addictive, folks. Caffeine is very addictive. Nicotine. Oh, man, I'm still chewing nicotine gum right now to try and quit smoking cigarettes. So nicotine, caffeine, addictive. Marijuana, not really. And why are people in drug treatment programs for marijuana? because they're court ordered to do so, not because marijuana is more dangerous and because it's more potent. So yet another reefer madness lie from the ONDCP and DEA turned right on its head by what? Amazing. Real science. So we'll be going over that today in our cannabis science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Stay tuned for that today, and also the Carolyn Wonderland Tracks, great artist and a great friend of marijuana law reform, all here today on your daily audio stash.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Strop, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
You're listening to NORML's Daily Audio Stash.
Wednesdays here on the Audio Stash, we have our Cannabis Science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is author of the book, Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the new book, Pot Politics. Mitch is professor of psychology at State University of New York, and we have links to his books at normalaudiostash.com. Mitch, thanks again for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, Mitch, it's great to speak with you today. I know you've got a power outage right now in Albany. You're really being a great trooper calling in today. I appreciate it. Now, we're going to cover two topics today. One is this story that 70% of those in drug treatment for marijuana in Texas are there because they were ordered there by a court or stemming from an arrest. This data is just shocking in its portrayal of a problem we've discussed here before, but it sounds like judges, lawyers, even the individuals involved don't necessarily have any dependence problem with marijuana. They're just going to treatment because it's seen as a better option than going to jail.
Unfortunately, we never really see that form of the assessment. So somebody gets busted and they get the opportunity to go for treatment. Well, of course, they would prefer that to imprisonment. So away they go. What's weird is we really have no idea if these folks are really dependent on marijuana or not. So do they experience withdrawal? Is there a lot of tolerance? Are they messing up in other areas of their lives? We don't know. All we know is they happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and got arrested. With that in mind, then it's hard to make sense of the treatment outcome data on this topic. So if we say, oh, gee, these people do really well, it may very well be because they didn't really have much of a problem in the first place other than poor luck and being in the wrong place at the wrong time. If they don't do particularly well, I have to think that maybe it's because they weren't particularly motivated because they're really there just to avoid prison rather than out of some sincere desire to alter some marijuana use behavior. So we're sort of stuck.
And Mitch, I know when it comes to alcohol offenses, when someone is arrested for DUI and the like, they're sort of graded on their relationship with alcohol. You know, those who are seen to have a real problem might be remanded into an inpatient treatment, but if they're found to have perhaps less of a problem with alcohol, they're ordered into a 12-step program instead. But is there anything, any of this grading happening with marijuana, or does the legal system look at all marijuana use as abuse?
It's so different in each state that it's hard to generalize, but if you've got recurring legal problems with any drug, that's qualified as abuse. It doesn't necessarily mean you're dependent, though. It doesn't mean that without it you're not feeling the same or that somehow you just feel like you have to have it. And the abuse diagnosis is particularly rough on drugs that are in the illegal market versus drugs that are in the legal market. So somebody is much more likely to escape legal problems if they're hooked on nicotine or alcohol than they are if they're hooked on an illicit drug.
And let me ask, could we grade individuals who are arrested for marijuana violations to see who are truly dependent and those who are not?
The hallmark symptoms for dependence are usually tolerance and withdrawal. The withdrawal from marijuana is still a very controversial topic, although a number of scientists jump up and down and pretend like this is, you know, withdrawal just like any other withdrawal. When you look at the symptoms, it's more, you know, slight craving for marijuana, a decrease in appetite, irritability. I mean, these are not the stereotypes of withdrawal we get with alcohol where you're, you know, hallucinating and have these muscle spasms and, you know, those kinds of things. So it's harder to make the case for marijuana dependence. And then the notion that you would need inpatient treatment for marijuana is certainly controversial as well. I think even the most, you know, religious, daily, heavy user can often lay off without a lot of withdrawal symptoms and certainly handle that sort of thing at home, whereas the benzodiazepines, alcohol, other drugs, it's really not recommended at all that you, you know, experience withdrawal outside of a hospital setting.
Now, let's be clear here. We don't want anyone going to jail for marijuana violations at all. But this study looked at Texas in particular, where 95% of marijuana arrests are for minor possession. This data shows 70% of those in drug treatment for marijuana are court-ordered to do so. You know, why is all of this important, folks? Well, again, the ONDCP and DEA claim marijuana is more dangerous today because of its potency, and more Americans are in treatment for marijuana. But this is a vicious cycle here. It's part of the scare tactics and the lies, but this is really part of a real system here where people are ordered into treatment because judges see it as being more lenient than jail. And then the DEA turns around and says, well, look at all the people in treatment for marijuana, so it must be more dangerous now. Which, of course, as we've highlighted here on the program, is just false. And further, sending so many people into treatment programs for marijuana is filling up those rather few beds and keeping those who are addicted to substances that really are harmful away from treatment. Again, a vicious cycle of propaganda and reality here. So, you know, Mitch, as an addiction researcher, is an inpatient treatment program something that should just not even be considered for marijuana at all?
There's a big review of all the inpatient treatment stuff that Bill Miller did years ago, and the idea that 28 days or 21 days inside the hospital is somehow going to improve your outcome is really not filled with empirical support. Many, many folks who are experiencing substance-related problems can handle it on an outpatient basis and actually do better because they're going to live their day-to-day lives and come up with the sorts of problems that they're going to experience in their daily lives when they're not using, and that's going to be much more informative, whereas, you know, to say, oh, I can go 28 days abstinent, but I'm in a hospital setting, that's not, you know, really the same sort of set of challenges.
Righto. Now, Mitch, let's look at another topic today in our cannabis science discussion. This week, the new documentary premiered on Showtime called In Pot We Trust, following around a number of medical marijuana patients, one of whom is dealing with cerebral palsy. Now, we've discussed MS before, but today let's look at CP, or cerebral palsy. First, Mitch, tell us about the condition itself.
First off, I just want to thank everybody who participated in that film. You can imagine it's kind of cumbersome to have people following you around with a camera all day long. So, you know, both those patients and Aaron, that was really wonderful for them. Cerebral palsy is basically a kind of a group of neurological disorders that all have a few sort of symptoms in common. The symptom that seems to be most relevant to cannabis is this spasticity. The muscles just seem to kind of fire on their own, or sort of fire at random, if you will. Suddenly your muscle is contracting even though you had no desire for that to happen. And it turns out it's not in the muscle or even in the nerves that go to the muscle itself, but something in certain parts of the cortex, in certain parts of the brain, that is sending these messages in a sporadic, crazy fashion, leading to this really uncomfortable pain, shooting pain, burning, and spastic muscle spasm. I mean, you can imagine this is outrageous for trying to go to sleep, trying to stay asleep, trying to, you know, just stand still, get your daily job done. This can be a real, real hassle. It tends to start very early in life, and, oh, I'd say about between 2 and 3 per thousand people getting cerebral palsy. So it's a relatively rare disorder, but can be an extremely debilitating one.
So this is a condition somewhat like MS that has very different physical manifestations according to the individual.
Yeah, that heterogeneity, that extreme variation in the way the disorder presents itself makes it tough to sometimes identify causes and treatments because everybody is so different on this. But, you know, again, we're making progress, and slowly but surely we'll divide up people into subsets, into certain categories, and maybe find treatments that are common for folks who are in those certain general categories, if you will.
And how could cannabis help patients with CP?
Well, we've seen cannabis in both an animal model and in some other data reduce spasticity for a whole lot of different situations. And I think the idea that the cannabinoid receptor, the receptor that's relevant for marijuana, is involved in the way the brain sends messages to muscles is certainly consistent with a whole lot of research. Because this is a relatively rare disorder, we've only got a couple of publications on this topic, but we have tons and tons of anecdotal evidence, much like what's in the movie there, where people say either the muscle spasms decrease or the pain decreases. And the mechanism for pain may be also through that same receptor, and we've seen tons of good laboratory experiments showing that at least the strains that are available even through the U.S. government are very good at decreasing pain for a whole number of disorders and even for some surgeries. And I'm hoping that that's the mechanism for cerebral palsy as well.
Now, would it be advantageous for these patients to smoke or vaporize marijuana as opposed to having THC and cannabinoids orally administered?
I mean, I would get on my vaporizer soapbox, of course, but yeah, inhaled mist that contains THC is going to do markedly better because the onset is so rapid. You'll know exactly if it's working within a few seconds rather than having to take some kind of orally administered THC, wait literally hours for it to have an effect, not be able to moderate your dose as well, and end up spending a whole lot more money, even though, you know, really you could do something with you know, less than a couple of dollars worth of cannabis.
So in the states that do allow medical access, those who live with cerebral palsy, this is one of those conditions where people could really have a lot of benefit from cannabis.
Again, everybody's different, and you know, the response to different medications is very dramatic. A number of people do particularly well with the, you know, currently available pharmaceuticals, but they may not have the rapid onset that you can get from an inhaled vapor of cannabis. And in truth, if they don't like it, by all means, don't use it. But I would love it if people just had the option.
Righto, Mitch. Well, this has, as always, been a fascinating conversation here today. Many thanks for taking time to join us here on the program, and I look forward to speaking with you again next week.
Looking forward to speaking to you again.
Dr. Mitch Earlywine is professor of psychology at State University of New York. He's author of the book, Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the new book, Pot Politics. We have links to the books on our website at normalaudiostash.com.
Almost busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
What's up, guys? This is Miss High Times 2007, and you're chilling with us here at the Normal Podcast.
Let's get to some music today from Carolyn Wonderland. We have links to her website and MySpace page up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Here's a song she wrote specifically for this movement. It's called Annie's Scarlet Letter.
Well, my name is Annie. I'm about your daughter's age. I'm happy with my living, earning minimum wage. Last year I had a baby, loving with all I got. But the bills, they became too much, so I moved a little pot.
Now I'm an expatriate in my hometown, and I can't even vote to change the laws that put me down. And I only pray that you fare better. I wear my marijuana leaf like a badge, it's my scarlet letter. And time goes slow here from behind these bars, but I'm not so far away that I can't hear the cars driving down the freeway, wishing one of them could give me that short ride downtown where my little boy lives. But I'm an expatriate in my hometown, and I can't even vote to change the laws that put me down. And I only pray that you fare better. I wear my marijuana leaf like a badge, it's my scarlet letter.
That was Annie Scarlet Letter by Carolyn Wonderland. We have links to her at normalaudiostash.com. We've got time for one more tune today.
It took a lot of time. entity come calling, you had best be on your knees. Yeah, yeah.
Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, this is Webb Hubble. Life insurance is now available for responsible marijuana smokers. For years, responsible marijuana smokers have not been able to access affordable life insurance products. They've been forced to lie on applications, forego the health benefits of responsible marijuana use, or purchase life insurance products that did not require an application or a physical. If they were honest about their use of marijuana, they were either flat out declined or rated so high that they could not afford the coverage they needed. No longer. Recently, one of Normal's members contacted them with a problem. He was expanding his business and his bank was requiring additional life insurance. His local insurance agent had told him he simply had to quit smoking marijuana to get the coverage the bank was requiring. He didn't want to quit, and he wanted Normal's help. They contacted me, their insurance agent, and someone who was familiar with the insurance problems marijuana smokers face, and we both wanted to find a solution. I contacted my associate, Marvin Address, a nationwide expert in the area of life insurance, and we took on the challenge. Marvin was finally able to convince a carrier to underwrite the Normal member without the usual negative implications of marijuana use. The member not only received the coverage he needed, he was able to save additional money on the premiums he was paying for the coverage he already had in place. Normal uniquely supports cannabis consumers. As a result of this occurrence, Normal, Marvin, and myself decided that the time was ripe to make traditional insurance products available to responsible smokers without the usual negative implication. Two carriers have already agreed to offer all of their traditional life insurance products at all levels without excluding individuals who smoke marijuana responsibly. I am hopeful that this program can be ultimately expanded to make available disability and health insurance products as well. Help Normal and help yourself. If you've been declined for life insurance, are paying above market premiums, or simply want to know what now may be available in the way of insurance for marijuana smokers, contact me at info@mclaughlinonline.com or simply call me at 202-293-5566. Challenging as it may be, Normal is a public interest organization working hard to both reform cannabis laws as well as providing valuable services to their membership and cannabis consumers all around the world.
To Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow.